time for You Oughta Know, a weekly conversation about all things automotive with your host, Toby Edmonds.
Good morning, Toby.
Good morning, Mike.
So, how was your drive today out there in foggy Palmerland?
About par for course for driving around in wintertime in Palmer.
Well, it's 12 degrees, and there was a scattered fog of one sort or the other, and and we're in 2018. Do you notice anything different about 2018 as compared to just a few weeks ago when we were in 2017?
You know, it's considerably warmer. I mean, colder, I can say that.
Okay. And yet, with even that sort of winter, as you might expect it, we're still... I'm just noticing that we have not hit that sustained below zero time that I can remember from years past.
Oh, no, yeah, for sure.
Okay.
No, that's something that comes up quite often over the last several years between, you know, family and friends who have been in Palmer for a really long time is that, you know, we remember considerably colder weather. And as you pointed out, for a much longer sustained period of time, as well as a lot more snow.
Sure. Okay. Well, what would you like to kick off with today?
You know, it's funny you should mention that because I sat down last night and I was going through the different topics, and I kind of got a little bit distracted because I started thinking about, you know, this and that, and I was trying to decide whether or not to do something that was, you know, a practical use, or if we should start talking about automotive technology. And right around that time, my phone died.
Okay. Well,
it froze up. And so the topic of, you know, because this has happened to me, you know, 3-4 times over the last couple months. Mm-hmm. And so I started thinking to myself, you know, is it the point in time in which I might need a new phone?
So that might be the lead in to a topic. Here's a piece of technology. It's how long have you had your phone?
Well, I have an iPhone 7 and I got it when they first came out. So
okay.
what was that? Maybe a year and a half ago?
Yeah. So it's a year and a half, maybe, or was early adopter 2 years maybe, but, and so
phones go, it's not that old.
No, but. And then there's the question of, and I think what I want to do is draw a parallel between something that many people have is a smartphone of one kind or another, and also another thing that people have, which is some form of vehicle. And to say, especially as we're rolling into 2018 and there are new smartphones and there's new vehicles, that whole question of when do you say, okay, this is not quite doing what I want it to do. Is it because I don't charge the phone, or is it because the phone is even though it's only that age, it's really needing replacement?
Yep, and you know, and Apple, I was, I don't know if you caught it or not, because both you and I are fairly big Apple people.
Yep, I saw it.
A couple weeks ago, yeah, Apple came out and they admitted that they had been purposely slowing down the older iPhones to urge people to go and get, you know, the newer iPhones.
Wait. Pause a moment, because their explanation was somewhat different. They were saying to ensure that you had a good experience, they wanted to make sure that your phone didn't do what yours just did, which was die.
Yep, that is what they said. And to a certain extent, I do agree with that, but it's funny because this is something that I've had several Apple people over the last several years, they would start screaming about it, you know, oh, they're purposely doing this way. I think it couldn't, and I would always be like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. Apple would never do that. And it's funny because, you know, Volkswagen had gotten into trouble for now, granted their situation was a lot more dire.
Right.
But, you know, they got into trouble for putting software in cars for bypassing emission systems on the diesels. And Apple, even though they did have a fairly decent explanation of why they did what they did, the fact of the matter is they were still purposely slowing down older phones.
Well, and wasn't the big thing about that, Toby, that they didn't tell people initially?
That part I might have missed. Why don't you go ahead and fill me in on that?
Yeah, because the parallels just abound. Because the thing about the complicated technology we're dealing with is that you can make this subtle change happen with a connection to an upgrade and so on, and not fully explain what's happening. I think what I saw as I read a variety of pieces from both Apple and others, observers and the industry, is to say the failure was not being transparent and saying, you know, we have found that the batteries will age, and if they are treated as kind of a normal thing, and what we are going to do is offer a couple of approaches. One, we will slow down the operation or even out the operation of this so that the battery will not suddenly deplete and leave you unable to function the way you want it to. Or we can say one of two things. This was a normal situation to be expected for any phone, so be aware of it. Or we'll offer you a warranty replacement. So in pushback against all the criticism, what Apple has done is make an offer that anyone with a phone that has a potential battery problem should probably jump on, because it's a replacement new battery that mm-hmm. might prevent you from having to buy if you have one of those phones, from buying a new phone.
And they're offering it at what, $29?
Yeah.
$29,
yep. Yeah. So I don't know. I would be hard pressed to say this is definitively the situation, but it leads us back to Volkswagen. And maybe for a topic to continue on with here, transparency, that if does a vehicle manufacturer, in promoting a vehicle initially and saying this is it's 2018, we have new vehicles, these are the best things, they've been improved, it feels a little bit like we're entering, well, that other zone, the political zone, where a candidate for any office will be saying, here are the great things. And then once the election happens or the purchase is made, well, yes, this vehicle won't last forever. This phone won't last forever. And my question to you would be, what do you think about what might be called planned obsolescence? In other words, are automobile manufacturers caught in a bind where they want to make it a vehicle that's not going to cause problems and have customers be concerned, but they also really don't want a vehicle that will last forever?
Well, and that's actually where I was actually headed with that is, you know, are we entering a world in which instead of, you know, deciding, having to make that decision about trading your vehicle in because, you know, it's got a head gasket leak and the transmission is starting to slip and, you know, suspension needs work. You know, instead of entering a world in which, you know, we make the decision to get rid of a vehicle based on that, are we entering a world in which we're making the decision of trading in vehicles because the operating systems that are in these vehicles is old enough to the point where it is no longer updatable? You start having software glitches as you're driving. I mean, we've talked about this before, about how many repairs can be done to a vehicle even right now just by updating the software.
Sure.
So are we entering that world in which, you know, 10, 15 years from now, we're going to go, oh, you know, it's time to train in the old station wagon. The operating system has been freezing up in it, and I can no longer make phone calls, and the heated seats have stopped working. We can no longer update the software. It's too old. We need to trade it in.
Right. Well, I guess that's part of the question. I know that even a particular model of a vehicle whether it's a Volkswagen or a Toyota or whatever, whether it's a Toyota Corolla or a VW Jetta, they go on for year to year, from year to year. But each year, typically, there are some changes. Sometimes not. You'll find model years, as I understand, that pretty much a part will fit in anyone from this to that year. But there are changes that occur. In your experience, what would you say are vehicles that have found a sweet spot and don't change very much?
It depends upon the vehicle and the popularity of it. There are quite a few vehicles in which Toyota is actually a fabulous example, in which there is a high rate of interchangeability in between the different years, the different makes and models, as well as the parts that fit them. You know, you might have, say, an oil filter, but that oil filter fits like, you know, three or four different Toyota model makes and models with years. I'm sure most people are aware of the fact that a manufacturer is only required to make parts for a certain vehicle for 10 years.
Oh, I was not quite aware of that.
Oh, okay. Sorry. That's sometimes I assume that people know things just because it's common knowledge to me. But yeah, a manufacturer is only required to make parts for a vehicle for 10 years. So if a manufacturer chooses to make parts for a car longer than that, it usually means that vehicle was in production for many, many years. And it's kind of like take a Chevy K truck, Chevy Silverado, for example. I mean, it's a very popular truck. It's been in production for a very long time. And yes, the body styles have changed. And very rarely, once you see a body style change, very rarely do you see part interchangeability in between the two different body styles. But, I mean, I'm probably going to be able to get the majority of my parts for a 2005 Chevy K truck for long after 10 years after they, you know, after that particular body style was stopped being made. Just because they were so popular, so many of them out there, that the demand for those parts is going to be there. Does that mean I'm going to be able to get every part for it? Probably not. I mean, things like trim pieces, radios, things like that, they typically stop making pretty much right on the dot after 10 years. And then they just use up whatever they have in stock and supply after that.
Okay.
But, you know, as far as what you were talking about with planned obsolescence, I mean, in a way, I guess you could, I downright cringe when Saabs come into the parking lot anymore. And it has nothing to do with the cars. I mean, the cars are great cars. But trying to find parts for a Saab anymore, I mean, it's exceedingly difficult. I had a 96 Saab 9000 CS a couple months ago, and I'm pretty sure I found the very last windshield washer tank in the entire continental United States to put on this car. And it took me close to a week to find the darn thing. I mean, it was difficult. And so as far as, you know, there are lots of Saab owners out there who are driving these cars that are perfectly fine. But if they were smart, they would kind of start to ask themselves, you know, should I start thinking about getting rid of this vehicle that even though it's perfectly fine running and driving, but knowing full well that if something does happen to it, the chances of them being able to find a part to repair their car is getting pretty sketchy.
So does that lead to, when making a decision in part about buying a vehicle, other than liking a certain brand or style, to look at the numbers of those vehicles that there are around, saying there's safety in numbers if a lot of people are buying them?
Yes, because that does have a lot to do with it. Now, is that the only factor you should consider? No, absolutely not. But, I mean, it is something to keep in mind. I mean, especially if you find yourself in the market for a car that, you know, in your head, when you're looking at it, you're going, oh, my goodness, you know, that car's so unique. It's so rare. Maybe you had one you were growing up or your neighbor had one when you were growing up. You've always wanted one. And you make this purchase of this really cool, unique, and rare car. It is something to consider when you're buying it, that of parts availability. if you try to find a part for an air-cooled Volkswagen Bug is considerably easier than trying to find parts for a 1971 Volkswagen Schwimmbaden.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you can find them, but because they are considerably rarer over here, it's a lot harder to find the parts. Say if you found a really old, cool, collectible Fiat, great car, lots of fun to drive, might be a little bit more difficult in the parts aspect, trying to find parts to fix it. And like I said, the Saabs are in the same boat, unfortunately. They're getting to the point where trying to find parts to work on them, trying to find people who know how to work on them. Saturns, you know, all these cars that used to be quite common, what, like 10,
sure.
15 years ago?
Yeah, I've owned a half a dozen of them. Very, very nice many ways. But you're right. Once they stopped being produced, mm-hmm. Then you knew that eventually this was going to become a problem. And so there we are. There are vehicles that stop being produced. There are models, either models of well-known brands or entire brands that go away. They are no longer with us. From the old days of Studebakers and so on, and in the modern world, there are changes that happened as well. So looking ahead then, I guess not only considering how many of the vehicles are on the road or being bought right now, but look what looks like the future in terms of vehicles that will have a future as we move forward into 2018 and beyond. Would you care to speculate on anything around which brands and so on are going to survive?
You know, I think that we've kind of hit a point in the automotive world where we've kind of cut a lot of the fat. GM there for a while has so many different models that it was almost ridiculous trying to keep up. But you know, most manufacturers over the last several years have cut a lot of the fat. So I don't think that we are going to see a reduction too much as far as, in fact, I can't really recall anything off the top of my head of any, you know, significantly popular models that are being cut from the lineup for 2018. Pretty much all the ones that we all know and love are going to remain. What you're going to see a lot more of, though, and this is something that you and I talk about quite frequently, you're going to see a lot of chatter amongst the automotive manufacturers in regards to development of electric vehicles, hybrid vehicles, definitely a little bit more on the electric vehicle side, though. And then you're also going to start seeing, I think that maybe not this year, it's probably still several years out, but keep your eyes and ears open for chatter about hydrogen-powered vehicles, too.
Right, right. Even though we don't have yet any infrastructure to support this, certainly there are manufacturers that are looking down this road and saying it makes sense. I know it's a cultural shift and all, but they're really the models that I have seen tend to be kind of pricey, $50,000 or so.
Yeah, but you know, if you keep in mind how much Tesla, you know, when they first came out with their cars, how much they were asking for them, as well as the first electric vehicles. I mean, they were right up there in the 40, 50, and of course Tesla was even higher than that. So it's not too far outside of the pattern that we've been seeing for cars that with alternative energy power sources coming out for production. And Toyota, and I've looked it up a couple of different times and I keep forgetting the name of it, but Toyota does have a hydrogen-powered car that is in the experimental stage. They have it out for limited production in certain areas, and they're playing around with the feasibility of it. So I think that it is something that you're going to hear a lot more about.
Okay. So what would you say? I'm thinking, you know, there are a number of brands that are most popular in Alaska, and of course, there's regional variations in terms of popularity. But I think we could identify a series of brands that are seen a lot and are pretty popular. I'll name one, Subaru.
Absolutely.
And you pick
Absolutely.
One. Go ahead.
I would have to say you actually picked mine. That's all right. Subaru hands down. But, you know, I'd actually say that Volkswagen is extremely popular as well. And I would not so much make, I mean, I think we can already safely say that Subaru is extremely popular all over the state of Alaska.
Right.
Whereas Volkswagen's definitely limited to the Matsu Valley and in Anchorage. So it's very popular, but we can narrow that one down even further into regional.
Okay. And then, of course, we have some well-known brands that sell a lot. Obviously, Toyota, when we talk hybrids in future, the Toyota Prius, I see a lot of them.
Yeah, you do see quite a few of the Priuses. And obviously, this is taking into just, you know, Chevy trucks, Dodge trucks.
Right.
Actually, Ram trucks, you know, Ford trucks. You live in Alaska. The fact of the matter is you're going to need something to haul stuff around. Either you're hauling trash to the dump or you're hauling your snow machine around, four-wheelers, you know, RVs, what have you. I mean, trucks will always be not only popular up here in Alaska, but necessary.
Yep. Okay. Well, so back to the original question. You're going to get a new phone?
I'm fighting it so much, just because I will have to admit I'm kind of skeptical. I know you're going to laugh at me for this, and it's okay. I'm so skeptical over the facial recognition software with the iPhone.
So do you think?
I'm not normally one of those people. I shouldn't say that, but I'm not normally somebody who's kind of sketchy of that. And I don't know. It's just, I have an iPhone 7, so obviously I have the fingerprint recognition on
it.
But,
right.
You know, just the idea of my phone scanning and recognizing me by my face is it's a little bit creepy. You need to tell me that it can scan my face and it stores. I'm just kind of like, oh, no, that's just a little too...
So saying something like, Siri, how do I look this morning, is probably...
That would be, or just not even asking and her just going, hey...
Comb your hair, right.
That. Yeah.
Well,
you got a little something in your teeth there.
Well, here's a suggestion, and maybe that we can finish up with this. Whether it's a new phone or you're contemplating a new car, ask the person who has one.
Yes.
Because I checked this out a little bit, and I know that I know some people who have a new phones with facial recognition, and they were pretty impressed. One of the utility of it, how quickly it happened, and how easy they accommodate to it. So I would say that's one thing I believe that makes it. It's a utility thing, and
it is, and I'm sure it's going to become pretty commonplace, amongst the technology market. But we might even get to the point where you get into your car and it scans your face. I mean, and that's how you start your car, is it recognizes you by your voice pattern, which there are cars out there that already can do it by voice recognition, but you get in your car and you say, Siri, start my car, and she scans your face and the car starts and away you go.
Oh.
Commonplace technological advances like for phones and TVs and computers and stuff like that, it takes a couple of years for it to trickle down, but eventually you see it in cars as well. Bluetooth stereos, iPod integration, those types of things. I mean, like I said, it does take a couple of years for the manufacturers to work it into their systems, but generally you start seeing this stuff kind of crop up, especially if it's extremely popular and desirable in the market.
Sure. Well, that the ability to speak to your car or speak to your phone is becoming more and more commonplace. And so,
Absolutely.
So how do we adjust? What do we think about it? What choice do we have? Might be the big question.
That's an excellent question. You're right. What choice do we have?
Yeah. Well, Toby, I want to thank you again for another stimulating conversation around vehicles, the past, present, and future. Have a good day today. I'm going to run the outro, and we'll be talking next week.
All right. Sounds good, Mike. You have a great day.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to You Oughta Know with Toby Edmonds. This program is a production of Radio Free Palmer, Big Cabbage Radio, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.